16. I had hoped, to be frank, said Gottstein, smiling over what passed for dessert, a sticky, sweet concoction, that we would have seen each other more often. Dennison said, It is kind of you to take such an interest in my work. If the leak instability can be corrected, I think my achievement, and that of Miss Lindstrom, will have been a most significant one. You speak carefully, like a scientist. I won't insult you by offering the lunar equivalent of a liqueur. That is the one approximation to Earth's cuisine I have simply made up my mind not to tolerate. Can you tell me, in lay language, what makes the achievement significant? I can try, said Dennison cautiously. Suppose we start with the para-universe. It has a more intense, strong nuclear interaction than our universe has, so that relatively small masses of protons in the para-universe can undergo the fusion reaction capable of supporting its star. Masses equivalent to our stars would explode violently in the para-universe, which has many more, but much smaller stars than ours does. Suppose now that we had a much less intense strong nuclear interaction than that which prevails in our universe. In that case, huge masses of protons would have so little tendency to fuse that a very large mass of hydrogen would be needed to support a star. Such an anti-para-universe, one that was the opposite of the para-universe, in other words, would consist of considerably fewer but of far larger stars than our universe does. In fact, if the strong nuclear interaction were made sufficiently weak, a universe would exist which consisted of a single star containing all the mass in that universe. It would be a very dense star, but relatively non-reactive, and giving off no more radiation than our single sun does, perhaps. Gottstein said, Am I wrong, or isn't that the situation that prevailed in our own universe before the time of the Big Bang, one vast body containing all the universal mass? Yes, said Dennison. As a matter of fact, the antipara universe I am picturing consists of what some call a cosmic egg, or cosmeg for short. A cosmeg universe is what we need if we are to probe for one-way leakage. The para universe we are now using, with its tiny stars, is virtually empty space. You can probe and probe and touch nothing. The para men reached us, however. Yes, possibly by following magnetic fields. There is some reason to think that there are no planetary magnetic fields of significance in the para-universe, which deprives us of the advantage they have. On the other hand, if we probe the cosmeg universe, we cannot fail. The cosmeg is itself the entire universe, and wherever we probe, we strike matter. But how do you probe for it? Dennison hesitated. That is the part I find difficult to explain. Pions are the mediating particles of the strong nuclear interaction. The intensity of the interaction depends on the mass of the pions, and that mass can, under certain specialized conditions, be altered. The lunar physicists have developed an instrument they call the pionizer, which can be made to do just such a thing. Once the pion's mass is decreased, or increased for that matter, it is, effectively, part of another universe. It becomes a gateway, a crossing point. If it is decreased sufficiently, it can be made part of a cosmic universe, and that's what we want. Gottstein said, And you can suck in matter from the cosmic universe? That part is easy. Once the gateway forms, the influx is spontaneous. The matter enters with its own laws and is stable when it arrives. Gradually, the laws of our own universe soak in, the strong interaction grows stronger, and the matter fuses and begins to give off enormous energy. But if it is super dense, why doesn't it just expand in a puff of smoke? That, too, would yield energy, but that depends on the electromagnetic field, and in this particular case, the strong interaction takes precedence because we control the electromagnetic field. It would take quite a time to explain that. Well then, the globe of light that I saw on the surface was cosmic material fusing? Yes, Commissioner. And that energy can be harnessed for useful purposes?
Certainly.
And in any quantity. What you saw was the arrival in our universe of micro-microgram masses of cosmic. There's nothing, in theory, to prevent our bringing it over in ton lots. Well then, this can be used to replace the electron pump. Dennison shook his head.
No.
The use of cosmic energy also alters the properties of the universes in question. The strong interaction gradually grows more intense in the cosmic universe and less intense in ours as the laws of nature cross over. That means that the cosmic slowly undergoes fusion at a greater rate and gradually warms up. Eventually, said Gottstein, crossing his arms across his chest and narrowing his eyes thoughtfully, it explodes in a big bang.
That's my feeling.
Do you suppose that's what happened to our own universe 10 billion years ago?
Perhaps.
Cosmogonists had wondered why the original cosmic egg exploded at some one point in time and not at another. One solution was to imagine an oscillating universe in which the cosmic egg was formed and then at once exploded. The oscillating universe has been eliminated as a possibility, and the conclusion is that the cosmic egg had to exist for some long period of time and then went through a crisis of instability which arose for some unknown reason, but which may have been the result of the tapping of its energy across the universes.
Possibly, but not necessarily by some intelligence.
Perhaps there are occasional spontaneous leaks. And when the Big Bang takes place, said Gottstein, can we still extract energy from the cosmic universe?
I'm not sure. But surely that is not an immediate worry.
The leakage of our strong interaction field into the cosmic universe must very likely continue for millions of years before pushing it past the critical point. And there must be other cosmic universes, an infinite number, perhaps.
What about the change in our own universe?
The strong interaction weakens. Slowly, very slowly, our sun cools off. Can we use cosmic energy to make up for that?
That would not be necessary, Commissioner, said Dennison earnestly.
While the strong interaction here in our universe weakens as a result of the cosmic pump, it strengthens through the action of the ordinary electron pump. If we adjust the energy productions of the two, then, though the laws of nature change in the cosmic universe and in the para-universe, they do not change in ours. We are a highway, but not the terminus in either direction. Nor need we be disturbed on behalf of the terminuses. The paramen, on their side, may have adjusted themselves to the cooling off of their sun, which may be pretty cool to begin with. As for the cosmic universe, there is no reason to suspect life can exist there. Indeed, it is by inducing the conditions required for the Big Bang that we may be setting up a new kind of universe that will eventually grow hospitable to life. For a while, Gottstein said nothing. His plump face in repose seemed emotionless. He nodded to himself as though following the line of his own thoughts. Finally, he said, "You know, Dennison, I think this is what will set the world on its ear. Any difficulty in persuading the scientific leadership that the electron pump is destroying the world should now disappear." Dennison said, "The emotional reluctance to accept that no longer exists. It will be possible to present the problem and the solution at the same time." "When would you be willing to prepare a paper to this effect, if I guarantee speedy publication?"
"Can you guarantee that?"
"In a government-published pamphlet, if no other way." "I would prefer to try to neutralize the leak instability before reporting."
"Of course.
And I think it would be wise," said Dennison, "to arrange to have Dr. Peter Lamont as co-author. He can make the mathematics rigorous, something I cannot do. Besides, it was through his work that I took the course I have followed."
"One more point, Commissioner."
"Yes?" "I would suggest that the lunar physicists be involved. One of their number, Dr. Baron Neville, might well be a third author."
"But why?" Aren't you introducing unnecessary complications now? It was their pionizer that made everything possible.
There can be appropriate mention of that. But did Dr. Barron actually work on the project with you?
Not directly.
Then why involve him?
Dennison looked down and brushed his hand thoughtfully over the weave of his pants leg. He said,
"It would be the diplomatic thing to do. We would need to set up the Cosmeg pump on the moon."
"Why not on Earth?"
"In the first place, we need a vacuum. This is a one-way transfer and not a two-way, as in the case of the electron pump, and the conditions necessary to make it practical are different in the two cases. The surface of the moon has its vacuum ready-made in vast quantities, while to prepare one on Earth would involve an enormous effort."
"Yet it could be done, couldn't it?"
"Secondly," said Dennison, "if we have two vast energy sources from opposite directions with our own universe between, there would be something like a short circuit if the two outlets were too close together. Separation by 250,000 miles of vacuum, with the electron pump operating only on Earth and the Cosmeg pump operating only on the moon, would be ideal, in fact, necessary. And if we are to operate on the moon, it would be wise, even decent, to take the sensibilities of the lunar physicists into account. We ought to give them a share."
Gottstein smiled. "Is this the advice of Miss Lindstrom?"
"I'm sure it would be, but the suggestion is reasonable enough to have occurred to me independently."
Gottstein rose, stretched, and then jumped in place two or three times in the eerily slow fashion imposed by lunar gravity. He flexed his knees each time. He sat down again and said, "Ever try that, Dr. Dennison?"
Dennison shook his head.
"It's supposed to help the circulation in the lower extremities. I do it whenever I feel my legs may be going to sleep. I'll be heading back for a short visit to Earth before long, and I'm trying to keep from getting too used to lunar gravity. Shall we talk of Miss Lindstrom, Dr. Dennison?"
Dennison said in a quite changed tone, "What about her?"
"She is a tourist guide."
"Yes, you said so earlier."
"As I also said, she is an odd assistant for a physicist."
"Actually, I'm an amateur physicist only, and I suppose she is an amateur assistant."
Gottstein was no longer smiling. "Don't play games, Doctor. I have taken the trouble to find out what I can about her. Her record is quite revealing, or would have been if it had occurred to anyone to look at it before this. I believe she is an intuitionist."
Dennison said, "Many of us are. I have no doubt you are an intuitionist yourself, after a fashion. I certainly know that I am, after a fashion."
"There is a difference, Doctor. You are an accomplished scientist, and I hope, am an accomplished administrator. Yet, while Miss Lindstrom is enough of an intuitionist to be useful to you in advanced theoretical physics, she is, in actual fact, a tourist guide."
Dennison hesitated.
"She has little formal training, Commissioner. Her intuitionism is at an unusually high level, but it is under little conscious control."
"Is she the result of the one-time genetic engineering program?"
"I don't know. I wouldn't be surprised if that were so, however."
"Do you trust her?"
"In what way? She has helped me."
"Do you know that she is the wife of Dr. Baron Neville?"
"There is an emotional connection, not a legal one, I believe."
"None of the connections are what we would call legal here on the moon. The same Neville you want to invite as third author of the paper you are to write?"
"Yes."
"Is that merely a coincidence?"
"No.
Neville was interested in my arrival, and I believe he asked Selene to help me in my work."
"Did she tell you this?"
"She said he was interested in me. That was natural enough, I suppose."
"Does it occur to you, Dr. Dennison, that she may be working in her own interests and in those of Dr. Neville?"
"In what way would their interests differ from ours? She has helped me without reservation."
Gottstein shifted position and moved his shoulders as though he were going through muscle-pulling exercises. He said, "Dr. Neville must know that a woman so close to himself is an intuitionist. Wouldn't he use her? Why would she remain a tourist guide, if not to mask her abilities or a purpose?" I understand Dr. Neville frequently reasons in this fashion. I find it difficult to suspect unnecessary conspiracies. How do you know they are unnecessary? When my space skipper was hovering over the moon's surface just before the ball of radiation formed over your equipment, I was looking down at you. You were not at the thionizer. Dennison thought back. No, I wasn't. I was looking at the stars. Rather a tendency of mine on the surface. What was Miss Lindstrom doing? I didn't see. She said she strengthened the magnetic field, and the leak finally broke through. Is it customary for her to manipulate the equipment without you? No, but I can understand the impulse. And would there have been some sort of an ejection? I don't understand you. I'm not sure I understand myself. There was a dim sparkle in the earthlight, as though something was flying through the air. I don't know what. I don't either, said Dennison. You can't think of anything that might naturally have to do with the equipment that... No. Then what was Miss Lindstrom doing? I still don't know. For a moment, the silence was heavy between them. Then the commissioner said, As I see it, then, you will try to correct the leak instability and will be thinking about the preparation of a paper. I will get matters into motion at the other end, and on my shortly forthcoming visit to Earth will make arrangements to have the paper published and will alert the government. It was a clear dismissal. Dennison rose, and the commissioner said easily, And think about Dr. Neville and Miss Lindstrom.